So I'm an E3 and I'm in California and I meet someone and I'm like, oh, he is not abusive to me. He is safe. He is friendly. He's handsome. And that's my husband, you know? So we got married because it made sense at the time. It made sense. I did, you know, the typical military marriage. We knew each other for 3 months, 3 months and got married. If I could do it all over again, I definitely would have taken the time to get to know my husband. I think that that is so important. Now I have been divorced since 2021 and I have not dabbled situationships, you know, stuff like that, but like an actual real relationship where we're both working toward marriage, I have not found that yet. But I think that that's important to not rush that situation because I'm not saying it was a mistake because I have my children out of it, but I don't want to make that same decision
Yeah.
because it caused a lot of heartache.
Welcome to Your Story Doesn't End Here, the mental health podcast of military and veterans who refuse to be silenced. I'm your host, Rachel, and my mission with this podcast is to be a voice for those who don't have a voice, bring awareness to mental health issues, provide value and solutions, and to change the culture when it comes to mental health within the DoD organizations.
Hey everyone, thank you so much for coming back for another episode of Your Story Doesn't End Here. Today I have my friend Sarah, and we have been trying to record for so long. So I'm super, super excited to have you here. And, you know, we're just going to keep this a raw, unfiltered conversation. Sarah and I served in the Navy together at Whidbey Island, and we lived squadron life together. We went on debt together and then also experienced LIMDU together. So what a thing. But thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited. I'm nervous. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah. It's, you know, a lot of people are, but even I, like when I get on other people's podcasts, I am super nervous and feel like I'm stumbling over my words, but such is the world of podcasting, I guess. So
I'm just going to act like we're talking like we were before you
yeah.
hit record.
Before I hit the record button. Yeah, it's all good. It's all good. So one question that I do ask all my guests, though, just to kind of lay some groundwork for our conversation, is if you could use one word or a few words to describe how you're feeling today, how would you describe it?
The first word that came to mind was exuberant.
Exuberant. Why
exuberant?
I'm
so extra.
I know.
Oh no, it just feels fancy. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that.
There's a lot going on right now with me and life in general. So I just feel like the world is my oyster, basically.
I like that.
So yeah, feeling extra fancy today.
That's awesome. I love it. So tell the people about you and who you are and where you come from. Give us the synopsis.
The short version or the long version. Okay. So originally I'm from North Carolina, joined the military at 23 and I got out in 2022. After that, I did preschool teaching a little bit, bartender slightly, and then now I am down in California, exploring all the wonders of the world down here. And it's been amazing. A lot of changes. They were really, really difficult, really difficult. But I feel like I've learned that being uncomfortable and being in an uncomfortable situation is a good thing. A lot of times you have to go through uncomfortable situations to get to where you want to be in life. And I'm not where I want to be, but I feel uncomfortable still. And I think that you're on the right track, you know?
Yeah. It is a good thing. I think the people that can push through discomfort and come out on the other side are the ones that see the most success and happiness, their version of success and happiness in their lives. And so I know you've been through quite a bit. Especially in, from what I know from the little bit that we even served in the Navy together. And so you gave kind of the general overview, but I'd like to get into more specifics about things. And so I don't know where you want to go with that. I'm going to let you take the reins on this one. But, you know, when we talk about the journey of mental health in the military, and I know you were a single parent for a lot of your time in the military, so I'm sure that's relatable to a lot of people who are listening into this podcast. I meet single parents who are active duty all the time who talk about just how incredibly difficult that is. But I remember, you know, the challenges that you went through when we were on debt and the challenges that you went through. I mean, not even just as a parent, but the command climate and all these things. And so there's like a million different ways we could go with this conversation today. And then there's probably things that I don't even know about you that you went through when you were either serving in the military or after, or maybe even before. And so I'm going to let you share whatever you want to share about your life situations, and then we can get more into conversation about certain things. Or maybe there's just specific things that you want to share about that you experienced and maybe not dive too deep into them. But I think there's a lot in your story that people can relate to. And seeing that you've made it this far, I think gives people encouragement. Because there were times that I remember even looking at you from the outside in, and I'm like, how the hell is this girl still? How is she still functioning every day with like all the shit that was just constantly being thrown at you? And so I know I'm inspired by your story. And so if you wouldn't mind sharing whatever you want to share with the listeners, and hopefully provide some inspiration to some other people too.
Man, thank you.
You're welcome.
I don't know, honestly, where to begin. I could start at from when I joined the military. I was in an abusive relationship for quite some time. And I had to make the decision of, do I want to stay here in North Carolina with this person who is not nice to me? He's not treating me the way that I deserve to be treated. And I went through the leaving him and going back and leaving and going back. And, you know, when before you get into an abusive relationship, you don't think that it's going to be abusive. You're like, this is my person. I love this person. They are, you know, they love me. They're not going to hurt me. And then it happens. And you're like, I know I used to always say before, I was like, I'll never allow someone to hurt me. You know, I'll never be in an abusive relationship because, you know, I'm too strong of a person to be with, you know, someone who hurts me like that. But I was, and I kept going back, and I realized that not what a relationship should consist of. And finally, I had to make the decision, if I stayed here, where would I be at? And ultimately, I valued my life and I had going on in my future more than someone else, you know. And luckily, I did have a support system, because if I didn't, I don't know where I would have been. I feel like, you know, I'm very spiritual, and I feel like sometimes God or the universe or whatever we believe in intervenes in a way that we don't understand. At the time, I had a friend that I knew from school and that I worked with her. She moved like a couple doors down from where I lived at. And had she not been up the street, like within walking distance, I might have not ran to her house that day and said, hey, I need to get out. You know, I need to get out of this situation. I might have not confessed everything that was going on. But I feel like everything happens for a reason. And what's so crazy, years later, when I was in Whidbey and I'd gotten out of the Navy and I'm cleaning Airbnbs and I'm, you know, that's my day job and my night job is bartending, and I'm there cleaning an Airbnb and I meet someone from where my ex-boyfriend was from, and I'm talking to them and I mention his name. I didn't say what he did to me. I didn't say, you know, everything that I went through with that person. And the guest was like, yeah, I know that person. And they're like, we beat him up, you know, we beat him up. And I'm like, you know, I always regretted not pressing charges against that person and not going through, like, I had filed a police report. I didn't show up because I, you know, I didn't want him to go to jail. I didn't want things to happen, you know. So I always carried that regret with me a little bit. And it's crazy that years later, I was in the military for almost 8 years. And so years later, the universe brought someone to me that knew him and reminded me, hey, you know, you don't have to worry about working it out because everything is going to work out regardless. You know, I'm not saying that I condone violence in any type of way, but it's not my place. You know, what happens, happens, you know, it's out of my control. Sometimes we have to just like they say, let go and just trust that everything is going to work out for us. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, sometimes a little violence. I'm just kidding. but no, that's really cool that out of all places, Whidbey Island, because I didn't even know this place existed until the Navy was like, here you go. You're going to Whidbey Island. And I'm like, oh, there's islands in Washington. Crazy. but yeah, I mean, there are certain things you mentioned, like there's certain things in life that it's just kind of unexplainable other than something placed this here for this reason. Otherwise, like, why else would this be happening in my life? And so it's almost like that closure for that chapter of your life. That's really, really awesome. So what was boot camp like for you?
Man, boot camp? Oh, man. I stayed SIQ a lot of the time. I'm not even going to lie. I was one of those people. I felt like it was kind of, I struggled. Everyone struggles, but I feel like it was kind of easy. Like once you get through boot camp, you're good, you know? So it's not as hard as you think it might be. You get in there and you're like, man, I thought I was going to be like the Marine Corps, you know, like they're spitting in my face and like making me go outside in the mud. Like, no, it was not like that. It was not
too
at
easy.
All.
Yeah. I shouldn't say too easy because there are people that struggled with it. But like when I'm eating snickerdoodle cookies for lunch and dinner, and you know, it's just funny because I think a lot of people I talk to that went to Navy boot camp have the same consensus of, and I mean, I guess I've talked to some guys that were in like all male divisions that had a different experience. So I still think there's a huge like gender gap there in the way that they treat females in the military. I think that people are scared to go hard on us. Why? I don't know, because it's not like I went into boot camp thinking like, oh, I need extra special treatment. Otherwise I'm going to like report someone for being mean to me. Like, no, I expected it to be the hardest thing in my life. So it's like the consensus is the same across the board. Someone should probably do something about that. But anyway. What was I going to ask? Oh, so you didn't start out, if I remember correctly, in aviation, right? You started out in a different rate and then you changed rates.
Did. I was undesignated.
Okay. So were you on a boat?
Was on a boat. I was on the Reagan for a little while. And honestly,
tell us about boat life.
I miss the boat.
Really?
I really actually do miss the boat. If I could go back on the boat as a civilian, I would. I feel like it's because it sucks. It sucks, but we're all in the suck together. And it's just like, I remember a couple times I would just be so happy and bubbly and like, good morning, you know, like, how's everyone going? Because we have nowhere to go. We're stuck there and we're all trapped and everyone hates each other. And I remember I got to the boat and I don't even know if we were underway, but a third class, she took the toilet brush and she threw it at me and she said, it's your turn to clean the toilets. And I was like, okay, got it. You know, I cleaned that toilet so good, cleaned it so good every day. I was in there with my music on, dancing, you know, during Spirit, they have Spirit of 76. So we would just clean in the morning. And I didn't even know what type of stuff I should be using to clean the toilet, but I got that toilet clean. And it was a good time. It was a good time. Great memories with people who, you know, later they came out and they apologized, you know, I was really terrible to you.
As I'm they like, should have.
We were all terrible to each other, to be honest. But I think it's because, like, before I joined the military, I was a preschool teacher too. So I just still had that, like, bubbly, you know, I'm goofy.
But I think reflecting back on my service, I think that had I had a different attitude about a lot of different situations, I think that maybe the outcome isn't the right word, because I don't know so much that the outcome would have changed. I mean, it probably would have, honestly, but I think I would have just enjoyed my time more. I think I spent so much time miserable because that was just what the culture perpetuated. Like, everyone is miserable. Like, everyone is drinking constantly, at least on the type of debts that we went on together. Everyone's unhappy. Everyone's miserable. Everyone's complaining about, per diem amounts. Everyone's complaining about the same stuff. And so it just felt like that was the culture. And I felt like, had I been that person that approached situations with, like, I'm happy no matter what everyone else is doing around me, then I probably would have just, I don't know, not been as depressed when I was on debt all the time. But that is literally like the culture of the entire Navy. So to be able to be in a situation and be happy, I mean, that alone is like a huge win, especially when you're first joining the military, because
People
they like,
hated me for it. They're like, who is this chick? Why is she so happy? I got on the boat, and I remember when I first checked in, there was this girl. I'm not gonna say any names, but there was this girl, and she was just, like you said, very miserable. Like, oh God, like, oh my gosh. Like, but I feel like a lot of people join the military straight out of high school. Well, they don't know. I joined at 23, so I knew, like, I was working a full-time job and in school full-time and trying to pay my rent, So I felt a little bit of a struggle before I joined. And because I was leaving a difficult situation, I was relieved to be where I was at. I was in California, coming from North Carolina. I saw palm trees and warm weather, So I was very grateful to be where I was at, but other people coming straight out of high school, and I'm not saying that everyone, other people's story is less than mine. I'm not saying that. I'm saying that we all have our own stories, and I think that when you go through different experiences, you're able to look at it a different way. I think that, like you said, looking back on your story, you're like, hey, if I had a different approach, then I maybe would have really enjoyed the military. But now you know, and it's part of your story and your growth, and you can apply that to, your life and what you teach your daughter,
I mean, it's like they say, we can't really fully enjoy the good unless we've been through the bad. And so, what I can appreciate about the people in the military who were miserable is that I hope that at some point in their life they look back and say, like, holy crap, like, I was not my best self then. Let me be better now, because I didn't know what I didn't know back then. But can we just talk about for a second, like, how people get upset with someone who is happy? Because that's very much a thing. Like, if someone comes in, this was the thing at the squadron we were at together, and if someone came in and they were happy, it's like people go out of their way to try to make sure that that person is just as miserable as everyone else. Because how dare you come to work and be happy? Like, why is that a thing? It's wild.
Misery loves company. And I find myself doing that sometimes too. Like,
I think we don't want to feel alone. This is my thoughts on it. I think that we want to feel validated. And I think I found myself doing that a lot in the military anyway, is like going into work, and work was almost like my therapy, whether that was a good thing or a bad thing, right? I'd walk in the room, there's someone that I would walk towards in my shop, and I would talk about whatever it was that was going on in my life, whether it was work related, personal related. And I just wanted that validation of someone to either relate to me or be miserable with me or something. Because it's like when you're offloading something to someone and they just kind of look at you and smile and they're like, oh, my life's great. Like, it just kind of makes you feel more like shit, right? So I think at the end of the day, it's just that people wanting that mass validation, which goes way, way, way deeper than just go to work and be happy.
Look, we're starting a new topic and I love it. I absolutely love it. I feel like Human connection is what people crave. And I feel like you said, feeling validated means a lot. Yeah, just that human connection, like dating. Man,
Yeah.
Trying to date someone. I've noticed myself, I hate trying to date. Dating is horrible because I meet these people and it's the same conversations and it's like no real deep connection. And I feel like humans in general, whether it's at work or, you know, dating, friendships, whatever, we crave that connection. And sometimes it can be a toxic connection of we're both miserable. Oh man, I hate this job, you know, but that's where we connect. And I think that in the military, that's something that comes up very often because you have so many different people from different backgrounds all the time. And so where can we connect? Because we don't listen to the same music. We don't come from the same culture. This job is horrible. You know, I hate this job. Yeah, me too. You know?
Yeah. That's such a good way of putting it. And it's crazy. We never really get taught how to properly communicate or cultivate relationships. All we do is we just look at our life experiences and, oh, well, this is how my mom and my dad created relationships. And oh, this is how my friends at school created relationships. So this must be how we do it. And not a lot of people, I think in the military specifically, come from these really, really like super happy situation lifestyle. Like you look at the people that are in the military, and I say this all the time, I have this theory that a lot of people in the military are broken in some way. And I don't mean that in a negative way of like, you know, everyone's fucked up, right? But what I mean is that you don't just join the military usually because you're just a regular member of society that's, you know, working your really good job. And you're like, you know what, I'm going to take a pay cut and I'm going to join the military because I love my country. Like, no, most people joining the military are doing it out of necessity to get out of some situation, whether that be an emotional situation, a change of pace, get out of my hometown, get out of an abusive relationship, homeless, in, you know, just a really bad area and just need something different. I mean, I remember when I first got to boot camp and this little Filipino man was asking everyone when we were all sleep deprived, why did you join the military? And everyone was saying their real reasons. And he's like, no, you joined the military because you love your country. There's people at high seas right now serving. And we're like, oh, okay. So I like completely switched up my answer. And anytime anyone asks me, why did you join? I'm like, oh, I joined to serve my country. But, you know, most people don't join. I mean, I knew people that were like, yeah, I joined so I could get 4 years of college. I'm, you know, I'm doing my 4 years and I'm getting out and I'm going to school. I have a whole plan. But like, how many people did you meet that were like, oh, I just, you know, I had a really good life. Life was great. And I just joined the military because I love the military. There's a few, but they usually have like the Joe Navy families. And it's just doing what mommy and daddy and everyone before them did, you know?
When I was in sea school, I was there as a fleet returnee. And I was in Pensacola, Florida with the new recruits just out of boot camp. And there was a girl in the bathroom. She was crying. And I was like, girl, you know, bring it in. Bring it in. I don't know why you're crying, but come give me a hug because everything's going to be okay. And I'm like, you know, what's going on? She was like, I just got my orders. And she said, I'm going to California. And I'm like, oh, California is great. I love it. You know, California is wonderful. She said, no. She said, I joined the military to get away from home. She was like, I don't want to go back to California. And I'm like, who's your instructor? Like, let's go talk to your instructor because, you know, if you've been in the military long enough, you know that you can talk to your detailer, you can get your orders changed. Like, there's ways that you can go about getting what you actually want. So I talked to her instructor and I found out later that she got her orders changed. But something that didn't sit right with me was the instructor was like, oh, her boyfriend got orders to somewhere else. Like her boyfriend got orders to Virginia. And I'm like, that girl would not be in the bathroom sobbing like that, like having an anxiety attack because her boyfriend got orders to a different place.
Right.
She upset because she left home to get away from home and she's gone back home. So
and you never know. I mean, maybe she left an abusive situation, maybe she left really toxic people are, you know, maybe for some people, I would even go as far as to say they feel that their life might be in danger in certain areas. But it is very common, I think, for people, especially if they come from like Virginia or California, like a major military hub, to end right back up where they came from, unfortunately, because yeah, most people do join the military to see the world to some extent, and not everyone gets that experience, unfortunately. Some people are, oh, you came from Norfolk, Virginia, here you go, we're gonna send you right back there. So did you go on any deployments when you were on the boat?
I did not. I wanted to. I did the whole, oh, I'm in the military. Now I'm a responsible adult, you know, and I'm getting old, even though I wasn't old. I'm like, I'm getting old. I want to have a family and get married and have kids and, you know, that beautiful life that everyone dreams of, right? And so I'm like, now I have a job that I can financially support my children, right? That's what I thought, even though the, you know, the military does not pay whatever, what the civilians think that the military gets, they do not get that, especially as an E3, okay? Yeah. So I'm an E3 and I'm in California and I meet someone and I'm like, oh, he is not abusive to me. He is safe. He is friendly. He's handsome. And that's my husband, you know? So we got married because it made sense at the time. It made sense. I did, you know, the typical military marriage. We knew each other for 3 months, 3 months, 3 months and got married. If I could do it all over again, I definitely would have taken the time to get to know my husband. I think that that is so important. So important. Now I have been divorced since 2021 and I have not really been in, like, I dabbled situationships, you know, stuff like that, but like an actual real relationship where we're both working toward marriage, I have not found that yet. But I think that that's important to not rush that situation, because I don't want to make the same, I'm not saying it was a mistake because I have my children out of it, but I don't want to make that same decision because it caused a lot of heartache. It caused a lot of stuff that could have been avoided had I taken the time to get to know that person. And I don't regret any of it because it's brought me to where I'm at today. But I would have definitely taken the time if I could do it all over again. Yeah.
I think that the way that the military lifestyle is set up, it makes it really hard for people who are in relationships where, you know, you're kind of feeling that like, oh, I want to live with this person. I don't want to do long distance. Well, either I live in the barracks now and I move out of the barracks and then I have like E3 pay and I somehow struggle to pay rent in town with this person and we just continue to date and hope that it works out, or we just get married and I get the BH and it's easier to live in town. And that's one of the reasons why my husband and I got married as fast as we did. And we knew each other before I joined the military, but we had broken up for some time. And then when we got back together, it was like almost this like bam, bam, bam. Like we decided to get married right away. And a lot of that was because it was like, you know, you're here, I'm here. If we're going to live together, we need this extra income. And it sounds shitty. Like it sounds really shitty. I'm still married to my husband, but if I would go back, I would have waited to get married instead of jumping right into it out of what I felt was a need for, you know, almost a survival thing of like, I can't be out here on E3 pay and be paying rent. And, you know, he's moving from a different state. And then now it's a stress and it's a struggle of finding a job and this and that. And I get it. Some people will say, oh, you could just do long distance. But I think when we think back to like the loneliness that exists in the military too, and then having someone that does feel like your safe space, that, you know, you can go home to some kind of what feels like normalcy, someone that if it's a civilian, which my husband was not in the military with me, it's like, it's some kind of normalcy that's not the military. And so I don't know if that's relatable to you at all, but
absolutely. Yeah. My ex-husband was not in the military either. So it was like, I can be myself. I thought I could, you know, be myself. But looking back at it, I feel like I wasn't even fully myself with my husband. I feel like he didn't have the opportunity to get to know me because a lot of stuff came up and he's like, why are you acting a certain way? And I'm like, you know, I've always, this is me, but it didn't come out the 3 months that we were dating. Out later on in our marriage. And same thing with him, like, you live and you learn, you know?
Yeah, I think a lot. I remember in the beginning of the military, everyone always made fun of the people that, like, you get with someone and then you start dating and then you get married really fast. But I'm like, you know, the military kind of creates that. And, you know, it goes a lot deeper than that, too, because you have boyfriends and girlfriends that have kids together, but they're not married and they can't really get the BAH, you know, to be able to support or get co-located. I mean, there's so many different scenarios here where, you know, marriage isn't what it used to be. It's changed a lot the way that culturally in America marriage is viewed. It used to be like, this is the gold standard. Like you hit a certain point, you get married, you have your kids, you have your white picket fence. This is life. Well, now we're not really seeing that in the world. Now we're seeing a lot of people that decide to just cohabitate, maybe start a family together, but not go into a marriage contract, because it's, I mean, technically what it is, it's a contract. But, you know, that we're just seeing different things in the world, and I don't think that the military is really caught up to that yet. But we could talk about that for hours, because that's a whole different topic. But so you decided to get married and then have your kiddos, and then you changed rates. So all these different changes in your life at one time. And then I remember when you got to Whidbey, it was like, bam, bam, bam. Like, you didn't really have time to, like, breathe.
No, not at all. So, you asked me if I went on deployment on the boat, and that's how we got on that subject.
Yeah.
So, boom, got married, found out I was pregnant because, you know, we're married now. We don't have to use protection. Like, we both want a family. Like, that's the end game goal. So, boom, I got pregnant after I got married. Kind of like you were saying, like, that's the story of most people in America. Like, oh, we get married, you get pregnant, you all of that stuff. So that's what I did. And so I got pulled off the boat, and then I went to a squadron, HSM 41, Hilo squadron in San Diego. And I was there for a little while, and then my marriage, we were going through some stuff, and I was juggling with the idea of divorce during that time. Then I moved to Jacksonville, Florida after my son was a year, and I was still juggling with the idea of divorce during that time. And I got pregnant with my daughter, which, again, all blessings. I would not change it at all, but that our marriage was still rocky and we were trying to sort everything out. And I feel like, again, I would not change the divorce. I would not change getting a divorce, because I feel like it rocketed both of us into where we are today. And that change needed to happen, whatever that looked like. And for us, that was getting a divorce. And parenting while divorced is very, very, very difficult. Very difficult. We haven't mastered it. We have not, but it's a work in progress. I feel like it's always going to be a work in progress as the kids get older, even as they're adults, you know, understanding things from a different perspective. And yeah, man.
And who knows? You might not fully get to that point of understanding until they are adults. I mean, sometimes these things take time. My parents got divorced when I was like 17. And I think even now, I'm 31 and I'm still asking questions about like things from the past, like what happened, because I can understand it from more like clarity now. Cause I'm not, I mean, at 17, I was still a child. I didn't think I was, but I was still a child. So, you know, some of those things are just never ending journeys and just a lot of forgiveness and understanding that we don't know what we don't know, you know, our life. I think for me, understanding like where my mom came from and what her life was like before I even was thought of in the world. Oh, well, that makes a lot of sense, because this is all you knew. because this is how things were with your mom and this is how her mom treated her. And then I would even be curious to know, like, back generations. It's actually really cool if, I don't know if cool is the right word, but if you look back at just the generations, if you can, you know, figure out that far, because, you know, obviously people are dead now and some stories just, you know, we're not going to know them. But just looking at, like, the ancestral history of what came before us, mm-hmm. and how that influenced who we are and the decisions that we make. And I think for me, I found a lot of healing in that personally, because mm-hmm. I've realized that there are certain things that weren't my fault, that they happened to me and weren't my fault when I was younger and I was still processing. But now I can find healing in, okay, I didn't know what I didn't know then, but now I do know what I do know, and I can forgive myself for what happened in the past. I can, in that, forgive the situation and others for what happened in the past, but I know who I am moving forward, and I can use that to help make me be a better person moving forward. So, and I think that there, you know, I said this earlier, there's so much relatability in the things that you went through in the military, divorce, being a single parent. I remember you just trying to juggle, like, being a parent to multiple kids and Limdo even, which, separate thing, but, you know, or just, you know, being on debt and having kids and having to deal with that. I mean, these are things that people deal with every day in the military and really, really struggle with. It's a reason why a lot of women especially get out of the military. I'm sure that there are men out there that are single parents that also choose to get out of the military because of that. The support just really doesn't exist. And so for people that don't know, because I know that there are listeners that aren't in the military, can you talk to us about, like, you know, there's family care plans and stuff. Like, what does the military provide for support, quotation support, when you are a parent?
Listen.
I did quotations for a reason.
I cannot specifically say, because I know I didn't utilize all of the stuff available to me. Fleet and family, you know, Fleet and family. They always say Fleet and family is there for you. Go to Fleet and family. And I did utilize Fleet and family for therapy sessions and stuff like that, counseling sessions, but that was about it. It's kind of like when I was on debt, you know, you saw it too. Like, I'm out there missing my family, terrified, because that was the first time I actually left my children for an extensive amount of time. And so before I left, I made, like, an emergency binder, and I got it off of Pinterest, like an emergency binder and I put in the addresses of my family, his side of the family, the kids' immunization records, everything, like the closest relative, their email addresses, their phone numbers, any allergies, like literally everything I could possibly think of was in that emergency binder. Terrified, but I left my kids and experienced that. And I have a lot of empathy for people who are still doing it every single day, you know, or going on these deployments and coming back and their kid has grown, you know, or lost a tooth, or, you know, you're missing holidays and birthdays and stuff like that. It's hard. That's one reason. That's the main reason I got out of the military, is because I didn't want to continue missing out on their life in the way that I was. I wanted to feel like I could be there for my kids if I needed to be there for my kids. And, like, this, my situation currently, my children, we share custody between California and Washington, and that has been a struggle over the past year, but at least I'm in the United States and not overseas. And if I need to take a flight, I can quickly take a flight. So it's, all families look different, and it's what you make of it and how you navigate it with your co-parent.
You worded that very well. And I think you touched a little bit on mental health support, and something that I wanted to bring up that I found, I guess, as a bottleneck when I was active duty is the mental health support when we were out on debt, I felt was very lacking personally. Mm-hmm. I remember that I think it was the one that we were on in Bahrain that I hadn't refilled my Zoloft before I went out there. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't need Zoloft. I can just go without it. And I went like 2 weeks and it was probably like the worst that I had, probably not the worst I'd ever been. Mm-hmm. But I was pretty low. And when I had mentioned how I was feeling and they brought me to the medical clinic, really all they did was just had me fill out the paperwork and then refilled my antidepressant and then sent me on my way. Like, it's just, I mean, you can say like fleet and family, you can say whatever is there for you. But I can remember even when I went to the McPawn with that petition, they were like, oh, well, you know, sometimes there's just different avenues. Like when you're in Isa, Bahrain, you just got to go up to Manama. I'm like, okay, but then I have to have someone drive me up to Manama. And now I have to essentially share with someone else that I'm going through something with my mental health. And maybe I don't trust that person enough to share it with them. And so there's all these little like things that exist in the military that I think are these barriers that make it just a little bit harder and a little bit harder when there's so many different things. I mean, I can't say BetterHelp is a great option because I tried that and I wasn't a fan, but there are all these other like virtual options. And then there are, you know, there are things that either other countries are doing or other places in the US are doing just to try to make mental health better, to try to make being a working parent better, that I think the military just isn't exploring, or maybe they are exploring and they just haven't implemented. I don't know, but I just think it's very archaic still the way that things are ran.
I feel like the mental health system in general, because I've been out since 2022, I was going to therapy, I was on medication. When I got out, I stopped going to therapy, I stopped my medication. And the support that I did have, even though it wasn't to the level that I wish I had it, was gone. Whatever support system I had in place, gone. And all of my family, for the most part, I have an uncle that was in Seattle, but for the most part, my family was in North Carolina. So the friends, the couple of friends that I had that were, you know, living their own lives, I didn't have any support. The moment I got out of the military, I felt like everyone turned their back on me. You know, I had no support. And I feel like it's not anyone's fault, but I do think that the mental health system in general in the United States is not where it needs to be.
Oh, yeah.
I've been trying to, you know, go through my own insurance and get therapy sessions and do all of this stuff. And I'm like, I have to call all these numbers and get referrals and get this and get that. And it's been months now. And I'm like, why is this so difficult for me to get someone to just talk to?
Yeah.
It shouldn't be that hard. So mental health in general, not just focused on the military, but I do feel like in the military, the representation is not there.
Yeah.
I feel like in the civilian world, you can go out and you can be like, oh, I don't really like this therapist, I'm going to go to a different therapist. In the military, you're giving like some old 70-year-old man who can't relate to you, doesn't know what's going on in your life, a different race, a different, you know, upbringing, like from who knows where, you know. And so you have to like tell this old man, oh man, you know, I'm not having sex with my husband anymore. And, you know, we're just not having a connection. And he's like, well, you know, like, have you tried Viagra? I don't know.
Like, yeah, I know.
Relatable.
I feel like I know who you're talking about, but, but yeah, you're right. It's a lot of representation matters so much. And I think especially as the military starts talking about diversity, right? Like we are, what was it a few years ago that they're like, you can be openly transgender in the military. Okay. But are they even providing support for transgender people? Because we're not even really providing support for women or for minorities like we should be. And then we're just trying to, you know, continue like making it look from a surface level, like we're this diverse, incredible organization, but we're not providing support for people. So people are still taking their lives, and that hasn't stopped. And it's weird to me that we keep just kind of like hush, hush, brushing it under the rug. Like, you know, there's aircraft carriers where three people are taking their lives in a week. That was the thing I remember a few years ago. And it was just like a Military Times article. And then it just like flittered off into the wind. And I'm like, why is the world not outraged about this stuff? Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of it's because they just don't know that the support doesn't exist, that people still have this idea that the military has like the best of the best healthcare and, you know, everything. But you're right. I mean, on the VA side, just trying to get, because I have to go through community care because I live on an island and I can't just go to the Seattle VA. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, trying to find someone. I mean, people are booked all the time. People stop taking clients. People move their offices to more populated places that make the most sense for their business, because it is still a business at the end of the day. It makes it extremely difficult. And it's, yeah, it is really a systemic thing across the entire United States, unfortunately. And yeah, I wish it was a simple solution, but it's not. So
I feel like doing what you're doing, talking about mental health, raising awareness, we're putting those, you know, we're planting the seeds. And the more we talk about it and the more we get the knowledge out there of like what behind the scenes is actually going on, what people are really experiencing, maybe, hopefully, one day that there will be those outreach programs. You know, I think that some of them exist now, but they're not being advertised. They're not being talked about. They're not being put out there for the world to take advantage of.
Yeah.
And that's the issue. Like, if there was some type of support for the people, because when you're dealing with mental health, you don't want to work on yourself.
Right.
You barely have enough energy sometimes to get out of bed, to get dressed, to brush your teeth, to eat, to do basic life needs, you know. And as a mother, because we're both moms, as a mother or someone who has someone else depending on you, you do those things regardless. You know, you might brush your teeth that day, you might not brush your hair, but you get up, you make sure your kids are taken care of, and you do what you have to do. But I feel like if there was support in the way that, hey, you know, you're struggling right now, you've reached out to us, let's make sure that we come up with a plan for you because your life matters and we value you as a person.
Yes.
That would mean everything.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just a different approach, or even just one of the things that I'm really trying to bring to the base here on Whidbey Island is just the support from outside resources, because there are so many. I mean, there's nonprofits galore. I mean, you're down in California, there's so many nonprofits out there geared towards veterans, but also a lot of them serve active duty, and active duty doesn't know that. And so, yeah, a lot of it is like, what exists out there? What's actually a good resource? Because yes, there's a million nonprofits, but we know that not all the nonprofits are functioning as they should. They're not all good organizations, unfortunately, and not all of them are going to be the best fit. And so, you know, a lot of that is just breaking that barrier to entry of knowing what exists and who it's a good fit for too. I think there's something in my mind, but it just kind of floated away. My brain's not functioning fully today. That's what I was going to ask you. What are you working on now that you're out of the military and you're a veteran, you're in a new location? What's your current thing? And then what's next for you?
So I mentioned spirituality. Okay. I feel like the universe has just really aligned me with what I'm supposed to be doing. Before I joined the military, I was very creative. I was always in the arts and I love music and doing stuff with like art. And I definitely lost that part of me. I lost that part of me after I graduated high school, to be honest, I was going to school and like, what am I going to do now? I'm an adult, you know? So I was in school and a preschool teacher, and I'm like, oh, I love preschool teaching. Like, this is what I want to do. But then, you know, stuff came up and I joined the military. And then I'm like, I'm still going to be a preschool teacher, all of that stuff. And I eventually do want to have my own daycare centers. I focused on one daycare center, but someone asked me, he was like, if you could have one daycare center or multiple, what would you do? Obviously, I want to have multiple. So that is eventually a goal of mine, is to have multiple. I'm just passionate about children in general. I feel like they don't ask to be here. They really don't. And they deserve the best possible environment to grow up in. But what I'm doing right now is I'm working. And we'll get there. I'm working full time. I'm in school full time, and I'm in school for audio video production. And that was an accident, to be honest. I was like, I want to go back to school. And the school near me doesn't offer psychology. I was going to school for psychology in Washington. And I'm like, but it does offer audio video production. And I was like, I've been wanting to do a podcast for a little while now. How can I do my podcast? And how can I do, you know, school and go to work and juggle all these different things at one time? I might as well do a hobby and go to school and, you know, learn about this. So I started going to school for that. And then while I was in school, I was learning about music. I've been learning about music, and that ignited the passion for music again, and the arts. And I'm down here in California, where music and art and theater is just so rich. And I'm like, I am exactly where I'm supposed to be. And it is amazing. So the concerts as much as possible, sneaking backstage whenever I get the opportunity, and just talking to artists. And so I just recently trademarked my own LLC, and I'm just, everything is evolving. It'll come out eventually. I'm not quite to the stage that I'm like, here's what I'm doing. I'm releasing everything, but it's definitely in the works. I had no idea what an A&R was until recently. And I feel like I am a networker. I love to talk to people, and I love promoting people. So I feel like that is what I'm supposed to be doing.
What's an A&R?
It's like a talent, kind of like you find the talent, whatever, like the musician, right? Mm-hmm. You have this musician and he's amazing, and you should work with this person because, you know, just kind of like bridging the gaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Between artists.
Like those companies that like connect, like,
yes,
dancers with the musician that needs them for the music video or something.
Yep.
That's so cool. Like,
I've been meeting artists, and I know some artists, you know, in Washington and just all around, honestly. And so I'm like, this would be perfect for me. And I'm like, a lot of people don't know how to, I guess, I don't know if they're scared or they don't know how to like branch out and be like, hey, pick me, or hey, I'd be perfect to open for your show tonight. Like, do you need someone to work? You know, but I'm like, oh, you know, I have nothing to lose. Might as well, you know?
Yeah.
Would you be interested? And
yeah.
And it actually has kind of worked out for me. I've had some pretty amazing experiences so far, and I'm really excited about sharing once it's evolving.
That's so cool. I think one of the things that fills my cup so much is seeing the people, specifically the women that I served with in the military as veterans, like stepping into their power. I mean, I have so many friends that I served with that had a really, really rough time in the military, and then as a civilian are just like shining. And it's so cool to see, because it's like, you know, there really is hope on the other side of the military. I think a lot of times it looks a lot different than what we picture when we're active, like when we're active duty and we're like, oh, I'm going to get out and I'm going to go work for Boeing and I'm going to make seven figures and I'm going to be super rich and life's going to be good. But then life is like, no, actually, you're going to be doing this like super creative thing. Like I have a friend who does stand-up comedy now. Never would have pictured that, but she does really, really well with it. I have another friend who's podcasting and making a couple grand a month in it. And it's funny because it does seem to always be in these creative spaces where, you know, we find our power, and no one active duty, no chief is sitting down at your career, whatever meeting, I don't remember what they're called, and saying, all right, when you get out, oh, you're going to podcast? Oh, cool. That sounds like a great plan. They're going to look at you like you're crazy, and they're going to be like, no, you're going to go to school. You're going to go to school, and then you're going to make six figures using the job that the military trained you to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. Honestly, like, I don't even know if I'm going to finish school. I don't know.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that it aligned me with what I am actually passionate about.
Yeah.
And what I feel like is my calling. And it is still scary. Like I said, being uncomfortable is, it's very scary because you don't know if it's going to pay off. But I feel like, man, it's worth taking that risk sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, that's incredible. And the other thing you brought up that really resonated with me just now is you don't know if you're going to finish school, and that's okay. I didn't finish nursing school, but I loved the experience that I got and the little bit of time that I did it. I loved the skills that I learned. I loved the people that I met. And I think that truly there are times in life when you're just there for the experience, or you're just there for maybe that little pivot that you need in life. You're not there to actually get a degree and become an audio video engineer for a big company, but maybe you needed that pivot to do what you want to do. And we realistically don't know. Like, we don't know where life's going to take us. We can try to control it the best we can, but if we just let go and do the things that we're doing in that moment and just focus on the outcome that we're looking for, then it's really beautiful where life takes us. So I really appreciate that you said that.
I feel like, okay, multiple different things. I feel like we get taken away from a lot of things in our life, and we get put in a situation where we're alone. And that's when we do a lot of self-reflection and diving deep into the uncomfortable parts of ourselves. And sometimes that looks like being really sad or depressed or working through that. And you know, I've done a lot of therapy. And one thing that, you know, they mention is sitting in that. It's okay to feel sad. It's okay to feel that depression. It's okay to feel your feelings. But understanding where they come from is so important too. And something that I've also, like, you touched base about divorce and stuff like that, learning your history. Recently, I've been exploring, like, my mom. You know, a lot of times in therapy, we talk about, like, our reactions to certain things are because of what our parents went through, you know, how we were raised. So looking at that, like, well, she went through this. So it's kind of like, I'm going through this because of past traumas that they've experienced, you know, like they say, healing generational trauma. And man, once you dive into those deep, dark places and you kind of like, you feel rebirthed, you know, you bust out and you're like, man, this is what this is supposed to be. And treating people how you want to be treated, you know, and just living in your essence, I guess.
I love what that.
It's a different feeling.
It is. There's so much healing in it. And I don't really think that my brain was even like in a place to even begin exploring those things until I was probably closer to my 30s. So if you're listening and you're in your 20s, your young 20s, and you haven't got there yet, you'll get there. But
Yeah. 30 to, I'm now 33. 30 to 33, I've learned some of the hardest lessons I've ever learned in my entire life.
Yeah.
But I would never want to go back to 25.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable.
It's, and everyone's journey is so different. It's so beautiful. Just seeing how all the pieces fall into place. And I'm so appreciative that you came on here today. I'm so glad we finally got to do this and share a snippet of your story. And I learned a little bit more about you that I didn't know before. So thank you for being vulnerable and for sharing just a little piece of you with the world today. The last question that I like to ask my guests is if there's any last words or a piece of advice that you want to leave the listeners with today.
I feel like I said a lot. I'm not sure. I feel like I said a lot of advice. You know, diving into those deep, dark places is necessary. Feeling your feelings and knowing that your feelings matter and that they're valid. Something that I've done recently is I've started writing letters. I feel like writing letters helps me get my feelings on paper, you know, and sometimes just letting it out is what I need, because if you expect a response, sometimes you create that anxious attachment and you're like, oh man, like I want someone to respond to me now, but we don't really need that. We just need to like, okay, this is what we're feeling. Our feelings matter and they're valid. And then we can move forward in our day-to-day functioning. Yeah, that's my advice. Write, write as much as possible if that's your thing.
Thank you for taking the time to listen in today. With your support, we are able to increase awareness of the mental health issues affecting service members and veterans today with the goal of creating positive change. If you got value from this episode, please take 30 seconds to subscribe and share this episode within your own network. Until next time, remember, your story matters, your mental health matters, and your story doesn't end here.